So let's talk about three stories today, Alexander. Let's talk about Steele and Flint, which is an interesting little nugget of information. Once again, that's pouring out of the debunked and the collapsing Russiagate hoax, Obamagate, as it is now called. Let's also talk about Trump. Trump is looking to void the open skies treaty with Russia. You can explain that a little. And let's also talk about you have some more info with the Macron Merkel 500 billion. Was it recovery fund or rescue fund, whatever the hell they call it, slush fund?
slush fund, I think, is probably the best word because that's what it is.
Yeah, slush fund. Okay, so let's start with Christopher Steele and from the Daily Caller, which has a story called FBI offered to pay Christopher Steele significantly to dig up dirt. And this is related to the smear campaign against the Russian British professor. I believe she's a professor, Svetlana.
Lokova, yeah.
Yeah, Svetlana Lokova. And it looks like the FBI may have been working with Steele to propagate the lie about a Flynn Lokova fling affair, which was a complete lie. And Lokova has taken actually legal action because of that lie. So anyway, get into this story because this is interesting how the FBI was looking to give Steele a lot of money to
Yeah,
smear
absolutely.
Flynn, which falls in line with, I think, what we've been saying all along with Flynn, doesn't it, Alexander? That at the end of the day, this was all about money, Steele getting a lot of money, just create a bogus dossier, and that was that.
I think this is an extremely interesting story, and I'm going to say quickly two things that immediately stood out for me. The first is that, up to now, the entire narrative of Russiagate is that the FBI was the passive receiver of Steele coming along with his dossier. And he's coming along and he's approaching the FBI and he's showing them the dossier. And the FBI, thinking and humming and hawing, and not they're saying to say, whether this dossier is really true or not, and whatever it is. And they eventually take him on as an informer and they start obtaining FISA warrants on the strength of it. But again, and I stress, the orthodox, the conventional story is that he came to them. Well, now we see things in a completely different light because this is the FBI approaching Steele and asking Steele to actually dig up dirt for them, to do actually investigate for them Michael Flynn. So this isn't the FBI as the receiver. It's the FBI as the client instigator. So I think this completely changes our understanding of the dynamic of the FBI Steele relationship. And that's, I think, important because, of course, it shows again that this is the FBI, or rather the leadership of the FBI, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, all those extraordinary people, they're actually carrying out a very aggressive campaign. They're not being pushed into doing things. They're actually looking to do them, and they're doing them with characters like Steele. The second thing this shows is once again, for me, that clearly the FBI had Flynn in their sights. Now, we know that at this time, Flynn was the subject of a counter-espionage investigation, and the fact is that counter-espionage investigation seems to be related to two events, a dinner that an RT dinner that Flynn attended, where Putin was also present with all sorts of other people. And by the way, I've now spoken to people who were at that dinner. I even spoke to somebody who actually spoke to Flynn at that dinner, which is really quite remarkable. But I won't disclose more. But
A hint, a hint, just a little.
A former a retired official of the CIA. So there you are. So a member of veteran intelligence professionals for sanity. So I won't say more, but I'm just mentioning it. So and so we have all of this apparently going on at this. There's the dinner, which is apparently the source of it. But we also have this bizarre story about Flynn supposedly having this connection with Lochover, who is supposed to be a Russian agent. And of course, she wasn't a Russian agent and they didn't have any real connection. They just exchanged a few pleasantries and a few emails. And that's it. That's the whole story there. That's the absolute whole story there. So two things are enough to start a counter-espionage investigation. And who does the FBI go to for all this? It's Christopher Steele. So it seems very remarkable what is going on. Now, there is a third thing, and that is that Steele met with the FBI in an unnamed European city in October 2016. To do all of this. I am 99% sure this is Rome. Rome, exactly. I'm sure this is Rome. I'm sure this happened at the Link Campus University, which is the place which everything links up to. that's why it's called that. And the famous spy school there in Rome. So I'm sure that's where it was. And in fact, we know that around this time, the FBI was meeting with Flynn in Rome in order to discuss with him his famous dossier. So we got all of these things together.
Hold that thought. Which ambassador unmasked Flynn? To what country has it been revealed?
Well, it was Italy. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's
not a coincidence at all. Absolutely not. Of course not. So as I said, all roads, as you say, lead to Rome. And there we go. So we have the Italian connection coming into focus.
Every day it grows.
So this is all very interesting. And can I just say something? I mean, as you know, Alex, I've been doing a lot of investigation about another interesting individual in this extraordinary story, who is Joseph Mifsud. And sure enough, it turns out that he was apparently once upon a time director of foreign, international relations studies at Link University in Rome. So, I mean, you know, we have a whole lot of very strange things coming on. But we're going to talk about, I mean, there's so much to discuss about Mifsud. We'll talk about him at some other point. But as you said, all roads lead to Rome. I don't know for a fact that this was the city in question, but I think it was. Everything points to it being Rome. I mean, everything points to the fact that it was Rome. So Rome, this mysterious university, FBI not only receiving information from Christopher Steele, but actually asking him to do work for them, which is completely independent of the dossier, but which is Russiagate-related and which is targeting Michael Flynn on the basis of gossip created by Stefan Halper, it seems, remember him, about a dubious relationship, except it wasn't dubious and it wasn't a relationship that Michael Flynn had with a Russian woman who was not, in fact, an agent of the Kremlin or anything of that kind. So, I mean, it's all very interesting. And it again shows, as I said, for me, that the FBI is not a passive player in this affair. It's a very active player. It shows the centrality of Steele in the whole web of investigations that, you know, make up Russiagate. It shows the trust that the FBI has in Steele, and it brings us back to, as I said, the place where all the roads lead to, which is Rome.
All right, very quickly to wrap up this story, very quickly, I have one question for you. So the FBI was actively courting Steele, and they were looking to pay him big bucks so that he could propagate this false love affair with Flynn Lochover, right? Okay. Would it surprise you if somewhere down the line there's some hidden documents or some hidden papers that come out that show the FBI was also involved in fabricating a lot of the dossier, the Steele dossier, which was later fed back to Steele via Fusion GPS and the DNC, so that The FBI actually played an active role in a lot of the dossier disinformation that was eventually circled back to Steele in his dossier.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I'm pretty sure that an awful lot of the information, it's a fact that a lot of the information in the dossier came from the United States. And one of the major collectors of information in the United States is the FBI. So it's entirely plausible that they're just
circular.
Circular information, exactly, that it, you know, that it, we're looking at a feedback loop here. That's entirely plausible. I mean, that's the way a lot of these things work and operate. Wouldn't surprise me at all. And if you see they're getting back from Steele information that they're producing themselves, well, those who don't know Steele's role and where Steele got that information might see that as corroboration. But of course, there's always the worry that other people might have put Steele up to it. But, you know, lots of questions, still not enough answers. But, you know, let's keep that particular question in mind, because, as I said, coming back to what you said, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Not at all. Not in any way. Perfectly.
Very forced. Dirty stuff.
Very, very dirty stuff. Well, what I think we're getting out of the last couple of weeks of revelations is of an almost fever of activity in Washington and various European capitals, London, Rome,
Australia, Ukraine,
all sorts of places, a fever of activity to try to sabotage Trump. I mean, you know, they'll work, all of these people are working overtime, not even basically taking the trouble to hide their traces, but things going on all the time, all sorts of meetings taking place, all sorts of discussions happening, all sorts of people talking to each other. The DNC is in the loop, clearly. Hillary Clinton's campaign and her people are in the loop also. The British are, the FBI is, the CIA is, the Obama White House is, people in Britain are, people in Ukraine, people in Italy, people in Australia, all sorts of people are involved, and they're all working round the clock to try and construct a narrative to stop Donald Trump.
All right, well, let's stay with Trump. Mm. And he is going to void the Open Skies Treaty with Russia.
Yes.
What is this treaty, Alexander, and why is it going to void it?
Yes, this goes all the way back to the 1950s, and in fact to President Eisenhower. And President Eisenhower, as part of a confidence-building measures that he wanted to do, was that he proposed what was called open skies. He wanted the US and the Soviet Union to be able to send spy planes over each other's countries. Now, it won't surprise you to know that in the 1950s, the Soviet Union, not the world's most open society, to put it mildly, said an absolute and categorical no. Then along comes Gorbachev, perestroika, opening up of the Soviet Union, and of course, the Soviets changed their position, and they agreed to this. Now, in the 1950s, this is the world before satellites. Electronic surveillance like we have today, satellite surveillance, none of that existed to anything like the level that exists today. There wasn't the ability to sort of hack and listen into conversations on the scale that happens nowadays, the signals intelligence, all of that. So in the 1950s, sending reconnaissance planes across a country's territory gathered intelligence which couldn't be gathered in any other way. Today, this is a purely symbolic treaty. I mean, you know, the Russians do send airplanes over the United States. The Americans send airplanes over Russia. It doesn't happen very often, by the way, about once or twice a year. The amount of actual intelligence either country gathers is minimal. I mean, it's inconsequential compared to their other means of obtaining intelligence about the other, so each other. So this is a purely symbolic treaty. Now, I have to say this, I find that the pressure that you know, the initiative from the US to sort of tear up all of these treaties. I don't like it. I'm somebody who very much believes in arms control, who very much believes in the importance of confidence building measures. I don't see how this improves relations between the US and Russia. It is a fact, though, that many, many people in Congress have not been happy with this treaty for some time. They don't like the fact that sometimes these Russian reconnaissance planes fly over Washington, D.C. itself. So it's unsurprising that this treaty has been scrapped, and I don't think we should read too much into it.
I mean, the Trump White House and the Kremlin, they can smooth over any of the confidence-building measures that have been lost by scrapping this treaty, correct? I mean, they'll have diplomatic communication and they'll both agree to say, okay, look, we'll get rid of this treaty and no hard feelings.
Yes, I mean, can I just say, I mean, the very same time that Trump is scrapping this treaty, he's actually sent an a big aircraft to Russia with 300 ventilators for the pandemic. So this is a gift. So you remember the Russians sent a plane with equipment. Trump said that he would reciprocate, and he just has. That's perhaps a much more practical confidence-building measure than this treaty is. I mean, neither side needs this treaty. By the way, neither side, neither Russians nor the Americans, need each other's ventilators or equipment. That wasn't what that was all about. It was these are just friendly symbols, actions towards each other. The open skies one is totally obsolescent. It has no relevance, as I said, to the modern world. The exchange of ventilators, well, it's perhaps more than just a token. That is a more practical, friendly gesture at these times. We should not overstress this move, this scrapping of this treaty. Though I want to make it very clear that I don't agree with the decision. But you know, I don't agree with the decision. But I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
All right, and something that every European should be losing sleep over, Alexander, is the last story, which is the Merkel-Macron $500 billion slush fund.
Slush fund is exactly what it is. Now, I what provoked this is a long article in the Daily Telegraph by Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, who's a very, very able a commentator on European affairs. On other issues, I often disagree with him, but on his analysis of European affairs, I find he's been actually pretty excellent. Anyway, he is more skeptical that this thing is going to evolve into the kind of settled fiscal transfers that I was worried about. I still, by the way, stick to my own views that that's clearly what the agenda is, that they're going to borrow and it'll be all paid out of German funds. And I'm sure that's what Merkel is up to. But I mean, the most important point he makes in this article is that he talks about how this thing, the money is going to be distributed. And it turns out it's going to be distributed by the European Commission. It's going to apply its criteria as to who will receive this money. There's going to be what it calls very, very stringent conditions. Those conditions, it will be the exclusive judge of. So it will decide who gets the money. It will decide how much people who get money from this fund will get. And it will decide for which purpose. I mean, there's nothing to prevent some of this money being spent in Germany, by the way. I mean, yeah, it's that kind of thing. But this is going to be, I mean, he doesn't quite call it a slush fund. He's too polite. Maybe the Telegraph wouldn't let him use that word. But I think we, who are less constrained, polite people though we are, can call it that, because that is exactly what he's describing.
Can I ask you a quick question? I read Guardian. Yeah, I think it was a Guardian article where, and I'm sure a lot of the UK press and the US press is saying this is a Hamilton moment between Merkel and Macron, and this is a groundbreaking for Europe because they're going to put 500 billion euros, and it's going to be dished out to the hardest hit European Union member states in the form of a grant, no interest paid. This is not a loan. European nations don't have to worry about this money whatsoever. This is, you know, this is the ultimate Hamilton moment, the ultimate Marshall Plan to take Europe to the next step. What do you make of that type of analysis, that this money is just going to be given out and Europe is going to mobilize and prosper after this? Well, what you're reading on all
well,
the...
I think it's a completely ridiculous idea. And by the way, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, in the same article that I've been discussing, he completely ridicules it. He absolutely pulps the idea that this is any kind of Hamilton moment. I mean, one of the points he's making is that this is not debt mutualization across the entire EU, which, let me reiterate, by the way, I am opposed to. It is nothing like that. It doesn't come close to being that. In fact, it's not only not like that, it isn't that. So, I mean, let's not talk about it in this way. I think I'm more worried about the long-term implications of this than he is. But, I mean, a Hamilton moment, people just don't understand what it was, what, you know, the economic revolution that Alexander Hamilton did. I mean, this isn't like that at all. In fact, Ambrose Evans...
Why it's not a Hamilton moment, but yeah. Number two, why this really is debt,
yeah,
and why this really is a loan, and why the people of the EU... Yeah. The EU citizens, the everyday working class people of the EU, will eventually get taxed for this money. And I think it'll start with the working class people of Germany, of Netherlands, of Finland, of Austria. I think they're going to be the first citizens that are going to have the burden of paying this money. And then It's going to just trickle down to the rest of Europe. That's just my thoughts on it, but you can explain it better.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with what Alexander Hamilton did. He actually pulled all the debts that all the states had incurred during the Revolutionary War, brought them under the ambit of the federal government, gave the federal government powers of taxation. And some of the states, the richer states, states like Virginia, actually agreed a big haircut on loans owed to them by states like New England. And he brokered all of that. I mean, that was an economic revolution, which made economically a nation. I mean, it made of the United States a nation. This isn't anything like this. This is the setting up of a fund which is going to distribute, as I said, grants to chosen friends. Not, you know, to states, but to chosen friends. And this is an important thing to understand. It's going to increase the European Commission's powers to meddle in particular countries and to build up clientage groups within them, which is very much part of the agenda here. But you mentioned Germany. There are people in Italy who are saying, if this is going to be distributed in the way that is being said, Italy is a net contributor to the European budget. Italy is likely to be paying more to cover the cost of this fund than Italy as a country is going to receive. So we're going to get a situation. This isn't just Germany. It's just all of them are. It's going to end up, as I said, providing more money to the European Commission, which will be paid for by the taxpayers of the European member states to set up a slush fund, which the European Commission will have total control over. I mean, this isn't a Hamilton moment. This is the
neoliberalism on steroids. It's
That's exactly what it is. I mean, I would come very close to saying institutionalized corruption. I mean, it's practically what it amounts to. That's why, by the way, I insist on calling this a slush fund, because that is exactly how it's all going to work. A slush fund that you and I and every other citizen of this so-called union is going to be paying for, because we are going to be paying for, because it is going to be paid out of the EU budget, to which all of our countries make contributions.
God, what those, the what they thought of.
No.
It's incredible absolutely. What they came up with.
Absolutely, absolutely. Quite so. They always come up with these things, though. As I said, this is always their way. I mean, it's always partly to keep the show on the road. And can I remind you that, of course, none of this money, apparently, I said in a previous video, 2021, the money would start to be distributed. Not 2021 at all, apparently. 2022 is the earliest day that they'll start to be making grants. By that time, the pandemic crisis will have been basically behind us. It will be. By the way, I want to reiterate that. It will be. It will not be to sort out the pandemic crisis. As I said, it will be to build up friends and make people rich in particular countries at your expense and mine and the expense of people in Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Cyprus, Greece, everywhere.
I like how the PR companies at the PR think tanks in Brussels came up with the Hamilton moment.
Yes.
Headline. And then they funneled it out to all the mainstream media and they pushed it in the paper. It was on Bloomberg, it was on Guardian. Excuse me?
Bloomberg is very important because through Bloomberg, they got the story to the financial markets, and that created a big excitement in the financial markets, and that builds a certain momentum there. But that's exactly why it's the PR companies were doing all of this. But I mean, that's not what this is. I mean, Alexander Hamilton, if you were to see all of this, he was a very clever, sardonic man. He'd be laughing. He'd be... His sides would be splitting at seeing this sort of thing. It's about as far from what he was, setting out to create as it's possible to get. I mean, Hamilton, controversial man that he is for some people, I believe, was, a genius. This isn't the work of a genius.
We're an evil genius if you look at Merkel. An evil genius and a dunce.
I know. Absolutely. I mean,
doofus.
Absolutely. But it's more like I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's a sort of more like the Capone moment, I think, than the Hamilton moment.
Well, you have genius in Angela Merkel, then you have the Napoleon wannabe in Macron. So I mean.
What did Capone do? I mean, he used to sort of raise money in all kinds of ways and then distribute it to all his friends in Chicago and elsewhere in bribes and things like that. This is much more like that than anything that Alexander Hamilton ever did.
It's a real racket.
It's a racket. It's a complete racket. That's exactly what it is.
What's the crime? Racketeering?
It is racketeering. Yeah,
Racketeering. This is incredible. Jeez. What a mess. All right. We'll leave it there. We're getting played, by the way, Alexander. All the EU citizens, you're getting played. All of us. Me,
absolutely.
You. Well, you're out. You're out. Everyone in the UK, congratulations. Everyone's watching this.
Remember,
you're out.
I know. But, I remember I have interests in Greece. So yeah. I'm played too.
Well, everyone else who's in the UK, congratulations, you guys.
You got out. Exactly.
God bless you.
God bless you.
All right. We'll leave it there. Let's move on.